Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to episode 67 of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. I am your host, Rick Verbanis, and as always, I am joined by the best gosh darn co-host out there. That would be Mr. Bob Lucius. Bob? Hello, Mr. Ross. Well, hello, Mrs. Rachel.
Wow, you are, was that, well, your time frame, I think, is accurate, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's in your favor.
what did I just do there, Bob?
Was that from Friends?
It was from Friends.
Was that Ross and Rachel?
It was, yeah. Ross and Rachel. It was from the episode where they go to Vegas and Ross and Rachel get a little tipsy, okay, a lot, yeah. And then they go into a chapel and they get married, and then they burst out of the doors, and he says to her, "Hello, Mr. Ross," and she says, "Well, hello, Mrs. Rachel," and then they laugh, and then they go out the door and throw up. So I figured with us covering today,
yeah,
which would be Captain America 371, 1990. And with it being Steve and Rachel's first date, I figured it was just like, just perfect.
You boggle my mind with the pop culture references. But I got to ask you, was this before, I assume, was this after or before they were on a break?
Oh, I don't know, Bob. I didn't do my research on Friends before
this
episode.
Oh, you didn't? Don't you remember when they went on a break?
We were on a break.
You can't tell you how many times I've used that line ever since. I thought we were on a break. Not now, I'm married, of course. But yeah, back in the day. Back in the day, my friend.
Yes. Well, back in 1990 was when this issue came out. And the cover date was June of 1990. So came out in the spring, you know, a few months before, but we're going to be covering this because it is, and we're just doing one issue. We're just going to do one issue, which means that it will probably only be an hour and a half podcast.
Right. Most of you can get this done in your commute this week.
We'll see. We'll see. No promises. But this particular issue, when we post it in the Facebook group, gets a lot of responses. People loving this issue. Hey, it reminded me of a sitcom. I love seeing Steve, you know, as Steve, not Captain America. Loved Rachel. One of our patrons, Grant Ball, wrote this was one of his favorite issues ever. So a lot of people love this particular issue. So we figured, hey, we need to take a stroll down memory lane in the 1990s. Let's pick this one.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of fans of Diamondback out there. We all have our own sweet spot, right, of Cap's lovely ladies. And there's a lot of folks who Diamondback is near and dear to their heart. So,
100%. We did a poll in the Facebook group. Oh, and it could have been about a year ago. So it's been a little while. But it was like, who was your favorite comic love interest? And there was Sharon Carter and Bernie Rosenthal, Rachel Leighton, maybe Peggy Carter was in there. Mm-hmm. Connie Ferrero?
Connie, yep. Connie,
right?
Yeah.
And then
Donna, right?
Donna. Yeah, from the Kirby run, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a little thing for her, didn't you?
Well, I like square faces, so yeah. My ladies, yeah.
So you like the big Barda types.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But yeah, Rachel got a ton of votes in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we'll cover that today in this episode. Also kind of covering something that went on in Facebook, Bob, I couldn't help but notice on your Facebook page, you said that you are looking to lose 10 pounds this year.
Yes, that's right.
And I thought it was funny what your son said.
Yeah, my son, I told my son and my wife, I said, you know, I think I think it's time. I need to lose a little weight. I'm going to try to lose 10 pounds. And he said, why just 10? You have a whole year. what a runt, you know?
Out of the mouths of babes. Right?
I know. Yeah. He's got my sense of humor. But yeah, I think, you know, it's a good opportunity to, and the time is right. So I said, yeah, I'm going to lose 10 pounds.
You know, it's funny you should say that because I also want to lose 10 pounds. So I was thinking, Bob, since you want to lose 10 pounds and I want to lose 10 pounds, we should challenge each other to keep each other, you know, motivated to lose 10 pounds. Why don't we, over the next whatever, how many weeks it takes, we'll check in. We'll check in and say, how much did I lose or gain this week? What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. A little accountability is just what the doctor ordered.
All right. All right, cool. We'll do that. Now, let's make it a little interesting, Bob.
Oh, okay. Okay.
How about a wager?
Oh, I like that. I like that. Okay. A little, you're a man of chance. Okay. Let's do this.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, you probably have an advantage over me, right? Because you're 6'1". I'm barely 5'6". So 10 pounds on me is a lot harder to lose. 10 pounds on you is a drop in the bucket. 10 pounds on me, like if I'm 10 pounds overweight, you notice. You're 10 pounds overweight, not so much. So I think I have a little disadvantage here. So maybe, I don't know, maybe you spot me something here?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to eat with one hand tied behind my back.
Okay. And of course, this is all gentleman's honor, right? We're not taking pictures of the scale or doing anything like that. You know, we are Captain America believers, and as far as the attributes that he stands for. So we're going to be honest, right? Yeah, so right. That's what would Cap do? Cap would be honest.
No pharmaceutical enhancements, no lipo.
Oh.
Okay. I'm just calling you out on that one. No lipo, cryo freeze. We have all that down. I don't know why up there. We got all that down here.
Well, we record on Tuesday nights. So I generally, I generally weigh myself like on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. As do I. I can switch to Tuesday mornings.
Well, it doesn't matter as long as we're 1 week away. Yeah. Right? We take a week apart. Okay. All right. So what's the wager going to be? We got to do something fun, something interesting that the listeners might actually enjoy.
All right. Well, you know, my sister-in-law, whenever she forgets to get a gift for some occasion, she always says, well, I got you a song and a dance.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're on a audio podcast, maybe the dancing part wouldn't be very effective.
Oh, so we will do a song. The loser has to sing a song that the winner picks. What do you think of that?
Okay. I got that. All right. I like that.
On the podcast.
On the podcast.
All right. So I would say, Bob, you need to sing, oh, I don't know, Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Okay. Right. And you would might have to sing Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me.
All right.
Hypothetically.
All right. Well, yeah. But, you know, we got time. And we'll take suggestions, too. So if you're in the Facebook group, you could put what song we think we should make each other sing. Maybe we'll go by votes on that. Who knows? We'll see. I don't think we should do the whole song. I mean, like, I'm not going to go, hey, Bob, you need to sing American Pie. We'll lose listeners.
Where'd all our patrons go?
Yes. You need to sing Enigata de Vida. All right. Some sort of Frankenstein, like whatever 10-minute song. We'll keep it to, what do you say, a minute, or is that too long?
I think that might be a bit too long. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit fragile minded when I'm listening to a podcast. If somebody's singing 30, a minute, I might have a problem.
Okay.
So yeah,
30 seconds.
People are in traffic. There's road rage. You know, all kinds of things to worry about.
We don't want people swerving. That's true. All right. It's a bet. It's a wager. All right. Starting next podcast, we'll weigh in. And the first person to lose 10 pounds will be able to pick what the other person has to say. All right.
All right.
All right. Pinky swear.
Pinky swear.
Pinky swear. All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so let's get to this week's issue, which is Captain America Volume 1, Issue 371. As I mentioned before, it had cover date of June 1990. Who was the creative team, you may ask, on this? We're into the run of Mark Gruenwald, right? He's been writing this for a few years now. And before, there was, just fantastic stories that were done with artist Kieran Dwyer. We went through the whole Captain storyline. And now we had just finished about 9 issues earlier. We just finished the Bloodstone Hunt. And that was a great story. Fun story, a la Indiana Jones globetrotting around there. And we covered that one of our very, it was our very first Captain America Volume 1 story that we covered in this podcast. It was episode 3. So check that out. That was a 1989 story, issues 357 through 362. So what has happened since then? Well, we have a new artist. So Kieran Dwyer left and Ron Lim came on, and Ron Lim had a nice little run on this series. And he gets a lot of votes when it comes to favorite Cap artists. He has a distinctive style. He certainly does. He's done a lot of cosmic stuff, right? He's best known for Silver Surfer. He had done the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade. He's kind of known for those kind of space type stories, but he handled Captain America very well for a little while here. Danny Bilondi is the inker, and that name should sound familiar. He's been a longtime inker on the series. Colorist was Steve Busolato, letterer Jack Morelli, and the editor Ralph Macchio. And then there's a backup story in this, which we'll also cover in today's episode, written by Mark Gruenwald. This one has art by Mark Bagley and then inked by Don Hudson. And that's something that they started doing a little while ago, is having these backup stories. And it's been pretty interesting. Some of them, the art was by Mark Bright. And then Mark Bagley has been doing the art recently. So we'll get into this backup story and the solicitation that Marvel put out when they were advertising this comic for the retailers to order. It said, "Cap finally goes on a date with Diamondback, but Gamecock, the Trump, Black Mamba, Asp, and Anaconda want to make it a night they won't forget, plus a special Diamondback tale." So that was a solicitation. And for those who didn't read this when it came out, they're new to this, or they don't remember comics in this time period, and you might have said, "Did he just say Trump?" No, I said the Trump. The Trump is a character, kind of a C-list villain. Like, all of these are C and D-list villains, really, to be honest with you. But the Trump is a magician. And I guess named after kind of like a Trump card, if you will.
All right. I don't remember reading this when it first came out, Rick, but this was a busy time for me in my life. So I'm not surprised I missed it at the time, but that's the thing with like the Facebook group, right? Is you get in the podcast, is you get sort of turned on to some of these stories you missed the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember getting this myself because I was in college at the time and I still have my original issue.
Wow.
So when we last left off here in the podcast, we were doing that Bloodstone hunt and it ended with issue 362. And this is, of course, 371. What happened in between that time? Well, at the end of 362, Bob, I don't know if you remember, at the end of the Bloodstone hunt, Crossbones runs away with Diamondback. He kidnaps Diamondback. Cap was kind of like, where'd she go? And then he kind of stopped paying attention. Well, the next couple of issues, 363 and 364, we see Crossbones takes Rachel to Madripoor and then kidnaps her, takes her to a bordello and ties her up to a bed. And then but she escapes. And then Cap travels to Madripoor to try to rescue Diamondback. But of course she escapes, doesn't need him to rescue her. And there's two issues or cover that. And there's a battle between Cap and Crossbones. Then we get into three issues of Acts of Vengeance. Do you remember that? Probably not, because you said you were a little busy during this time. Acts of Vengeance was this interesting crossover that Marvel did to swap up the villains. So we're going to have the Red Skull take on this hero. And then Magneto is going to come over and take care of this hero. And it was some sort of idea to kind of change some things up. I mean, if you remember a couple episodes ago with Jim Shooter, what he was talking about, he said basically, and he was gone by this point, but he basically said, hey, if someone said, you can't use Dr. Doom as a Fantastic Four villain, and he was like, no, you can totally, like, you can use any villain you want. And he liked the idea of mixing things up. He wrote the story in issue 259 where Doc Ock took on Captain America. So he liked that sort of thing. And I think this was kind of a continuation of that, this Acts of Vengeance three issues. Then there's a couple more issues. And then there's this House of Skull issue that we will have to get to one of these days. It's an interesting one where the Red Skull's on his deathbed and Steve and Rachel go there to check this out, because as far as Cap's aware, he thinks the Red Skull died. That brings us to, they just got back from the Skull House, and that brings us to this issue. So this is a fun cover, right? Because, and they took a little bit of a chance here, because there's no Captain America on the cover. Instead, you've got a Steve Rogers in his civilian clothes, dressed up, walking with Rachel Leighton in her civilian clothes, dressed up, and they're walking down an alley, and you've got some villains on one side of the corner waiting for them to cross, and some of the female fatales from the Serpent Society up on a roof looking down on them. And it says, nothing can prevent Cap and Diamondback from having a pleasant night on the town. And then a separate box says, oh yeah. And this story is called Cap's Night Out. And it says at the bottom here, the most offbeat Cap tale in years. Manhattan is a 24-hour town, a city that never sleeps, a place where something is going on all the time. One adventure leads right into another. In short, it's a perfect place for people like these. And you see Cap standing there, and he has this look of like surprise on his face. And then there's Rachel in her Diamondback uniform pointing to his chest. with one hand on her hip. And it says, having just returned from their run-in with the Red Skull upstate, the intrepid Avenger walks his occasional companion, Diamondback, to her Upper West Side apartment. And she's yelling at him, and she says, what do you mean? Well, see you around. So Cap looks at her and says, look, we've helped each other out a few times, but now it sounds like you have some expectations of me you're not letting me in on. I'm not looking for a partner. I've had plenty. They never seem to work out. I'm not looking for a girlfriend either. I've also had those. And with all my Avengers duties, I simply don't have time for a social life. So what's left? How about friend? You have anything against friend? Define friend. You serious? Okay. A friend is someone you can call on when you're in trouble or lonely or just in the mood to go out and have fun. Any problem with that? No. Friends it is then. Okay, friend. So I'm in the mood to go out and have fun. What are you doing tonight? Well, I have some work to catch up. Now, wait a minute, Cap. When's the last time you relaxed and forgot your responsibilities for a couple of hours? All work and no play? You're heading for a job burnout. And they're just having this conversation on a street corner, right? In the middle of downtown in the middle of the night. And Cap gets out his fingers and he starts counting on his fingers. I managed to schedule in some leisure time during the week. Read, swim, work out. I don't mean that stuff. I mean something social. When was the last time you went out in the town with a pretty girl hanging on your arm? A date? And then he thinks to himself, how long has it been? There was a time when I used to go out at least once a week. Then Bernie broke off our relationship, went off to law school. Guess I haven't been able to pick up the pieces of a personal life since then. I'll admit it's been a while, well over a year. Okay, so tonight you're going out with me. Here's my phone and address. Pick me up at 8, and don't you dare bring your uniform or shield. You hear? And she hands him a card. Now, wait a minute, Diamond. No offense, but I'm just not the kind of guy who would look right going out with a girl with magenta hair. And she does. She, you know, going along with her pink Diamondback costume, she does have magenta hair. And she turns and she looks at him and smiles. I'll fix it. Just be there at 8. No excuses. See you then, sport. And she walks off. Cap just looks at her walking away. And he looks a little confused.
I love that panel.
Yeah, a little exclamation point over his head. Of course, she is walking away from him in that Diamondback costume of hers.
That's a good point.
So we have Rachel sitting in her apartment, and she's on the phone. Tanya? Hi, it's Rachel. Boy, do I need your help. Now, who's Tanya, Bob?
Gosh, I don't remember, Rick.
Tanya is Black Mamba, who's her best friend on the Serpent Society.
Yeah.
So she says, I'm going on the date of my life tonight. I've got to look spectacular. You got to help me get ready. Pretty please? Of course I will. So who is he? You don't know him. But let me tell you, he's the handsomest guy who's ever looked in my direction. And then she thinks to herself, better not mention he's Captain America. Tanya wouldn't understand. Her being a member of the Serpent Society and all. All right, be that way. Meet me on Columbus at any 81st in an hour. Thanks. An hour later. So the two of them are in their civvies and they're at a hairdresser's. We'll start at the top, your hair. I pulled some strings and got my personal hairdresser, Eugene, to start to see you on such short notice. You're a lifesaver, Tanya. Don't know how I'll ever repay you. Well, for starters, you could tell me a little bit more about your mystery date. He's just a cute guy I met. Is he in the business? Sort of, yes. Fact is, he's a regular magnet for trouble. I've never seen Rachel like this. When she was in society, she told every single guy who came up on her to take a hike. This date of hers must be one extraordinary person. Meanwhile, back at the Avengers headquarters. Of course, you know, Bob, I want to say it like, meanwhile, back at the Avengers headquarters.
That was perfect.
Right? I mean, you just hear that, right? When you see meanwhile, that's like the voice I hear in my head. So his three companions are there, you know, the guys that work on his team. Now, you might remember them from the story of the Bloodstone Hunt. And they were, I'd say, Michael O'Brien, John Jameson, right, which is J.J. Jonah Jameson's son. He's the pilot. And then Fabian Stankiewicz. He's like a mechanic, right? Yo, Captain. Hi, Mike, John, Fabian. You guys seen Jarvis? I need to speak to him. I'll see if I could scare him up. Soon, in Cap's private quarters. And there's Jarvis. Now, Jarvis has got an eye patch on his left eye, Bob. Do you know why that is?
He's channeling Nick Fury, Rick.
That would be absolutely wrong. So, what happened was in an Avengers tale, had the Masters of Evil with Baron Zemo and what's his name? The Mr. Hyde, I think the Wrecking Crew, I can't remember, but they attacked the Avengers and really damaged and bloodied a lot of them. And then I think it was Mr. Hyde beat Jarvis pretty bad. And that's how he lost his eye. You wish to see me, Master Steve? Yeah, I actually have a date tonight, Jarvis. I could really use your help getting ready. Very good, sir. The civilian clothes I recovered when the island sank are, well, pretty out of style. Say no more, sir. I know an excellent shop. Few hours later, and then we have the older Peggy Carter, who is also on Steve's team. Steve, can I believe my eyes? Are those shopping bags in your hand? I need something to wear. I'm going out tonight, mademoiselle. Oh, I'm so glad. She comes up and she gives him a kiss on his cheek. I get worried about you never taking any time off. Really? Thanks, I guess. I'll be in the gym if anyone needs me. And then it's 7 o'clock. Here's Steve in his 1990s wear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Double pleated pants there.
Oh, love the pleats.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have enough of those pleats. And then he's got a pinstripe jacket, sport coat with Bob, look at that pocket. Yep. He's got a little mm-hmm. handkerchief coming out.
Yeah, and the skinny tie. It's a little skinny tie.
Very skinny tie with a tie tack holding it into his shirt. Oh, my God. I totally dressed like that back in 1990.
Yeah. I was dressing like that in the late 80s. So, there's a little bit of Miami Vice, going on in my wardrobe at the time with my pastels, my satin skinny ties. Oh, yeah.
Very nice. And I would have looked like him too, because my hair was blonde and wavy like that back in the day.
Yeah, I didn't look like him at all.
Well, let me rephrase that. I would have looked like the before the super serum version. So Steve says to Jarvis, who's rocking a really cool comb over right there. So how do I look? Splendid, sir. You are sure to knock them dead, as they say. Well, guess I'll be on my way. And then he's going to turn off the light, and he looks back, and he sees his Captain America uniform and shield, and he looks over his shoulder. Wonder if I dare bring... Better not. So within the hour, he is now at the front door of Rachel's apartment. But Bob, he's got flowers in his left hand.
I always bring flowers to when I meet friends for a casual social evening.
So, all right. Is this just old fashioned Steve where he's bringing flowers because he's seeing a girl and in even though they're friends, or does he know it's like a romantic date? What do you think?
That's a good question, Rick. And I got to admit, I'm torn, right? Because I do think he is a very, obviously, very traditional, conventional guy from that time frame, right? And so I think maybe he would just bring flowers anyway, just as a gesture of you know, thank you for the night. But on the other hand, her arguments notwithstanding, to get him to go on this outing, I do think he knew what was coming down the pike, and just decided, well, maybe I'll just go along with it. What could happen?
So you're basically not picking a side. You're picking both. Okay.
Correct, sir.
Okay. Well done. So he's thinking to himself, hey, I just realized she's never seen me with my mask off before. No big deal, I guess. I'm not as paranoid about guarding my private identity as some of my colleagues. Who is it? Your date, Steve. I don't think I even told her my real name before. And she opens the door and she says, hello, Steve. Diamond, what did you look terrific? You're looking quite scrumptious yourself. And there's a nice big panel of Rachel in brown hair, brunette, right? She's not rocking the Rachel pink that she had. Mm-mm. And she's got on a yellow, oh no, I'm sorry, an orange dress with a little half coat over top of her and a big belt. Quite the 1990s look with the big hair as well.
That is definitely 90s rocker hair that she's got going on.
Yeah. And she says, but please, tonight, I'm Rachel. Let me get my purse. And then they go walking out. And he's like, I can't get over how normal you look, Rachel. You look great in civvies too, Steve. So where are we going? And they're out in the street and he hails for a taxi. I know this nice pasta place in the village. Taxi! Bleecker and Thompson, please. And they drive off. But what they're on the street, sitting there, is a stretch black limo. And you hear a voice inside say, there they go. Follow that cat. And sitting in the back of the limo with the window down is her friend, Tanya, also known as Black Mamba, and their colleague from this Serpent Society, which is Asp, who is, her name is Cleopatra, but she goes by Asp.
Makes sense.
So Steve and Rachel are sitting in the back of the cab and looking a little nervous. And Steve says, Rachel, nice night, isn't it? And then I love this about Grunewald's writing is that he does the thought balloons all the time. And he adds elements of what people are thinking. And in this case, Steve goes, lame, Rogers, lame. Which adds to the story, right? Because it shows that Steve, who as Captain America, is very confident. He's a natural leader. Everybody kind of is, you know, drawn to him. But as Steve Rogers, he is very vulnerable, right? He's insecure. He's out of his element. So I like that. But Mark Grunewald also will take a thought bubble and just add it to some superfluous character that has, you know, never just some side character. Right. And then sometimes it's kind of strange, you know, like someone brushing a broom will all of a sudden think, wow, I've got to get this stuff done. You know, like he just throws these things out there. So,
right. Yeah.
But I love that about Grunewald's writing. So Rachel then thinks to herself, this is too much. The ultra cool, ultra calm Captain America sounds as nervous as I am. Mm-hmm. It's very pleasant out, almost balmy. So then all of a sudden there's a some sort of traffic jam. And then we hear these different voices. I'm not sure where all the voices are coming from. I think the first balloon is Steve saying, I'm glad we decided to do this. I really haven't. And then we hear these other voices. Hey, what's the hold up? A lousy traffic jam at this time of night? I think I see red blinking lights. Police? One of us better go and look. Cleo? All right. Be careful. She doesn't see you. So that was Black Mama talking to Asp. And so she's got a trench coat on, Asp. So, and she starts walking on the road towards where the police cars are. And she thinks to herself, it is some kind of police matter. And the police are yelling, okay, fella, just let the woman go and no one gets hurt. Beat it, lady. No rubbernecking. That guy wearing a chicken suit or what? And sure enough, there's the gamecock on the top of a staircase in front of a door in an apartment building, and the spotlights are on him, and he's got his claw up at this woman's throat. I'm warning you, this is between my woman and me. I got to teach her that nobody says no to the gamecock. Nobody says no? No means no, gamecock.
Yeah, this is pre that time frame. Gamecock didn't get the memo.
Help, please help. He's crazy. And one of the other police officers thinks, gamecock, he's some two-bit gang leader up in Harlem. He's straight off his turf. And Asp thinks to herself, macho creep, you deserve a taste of venom. Come on, gamecock, let her go and you'll be back on the street by morning. Hurt her and you're looking at hard time. And Asp sneaks behind the police officers. She gets up to on the side of the building. Ah, this angle should do it. Charlotte's my woman. This is just between her and me. If you goons don't buzz off. And then there's a big zap. Actually, that's probably not. I said it wrong. Bob, how do you say this special effect here? And he does. He gets zapped and he falls backwards. I ain't going to be responsible for it. Whoa. What the heck was that? Lightning? Move in. Move in. Freeze, rooster man. And he's laying on his back and he puts his hands up. Gamecock. So Asp starts walking back in her trench coat. And one of the taxi that Steve and Rachel are in, she's walking by and the driver says, so what's going up there, lady? Cops caught a purse snatcher. Did Rachel notice me? Don't think so. Looks like she only has eyes for her date. 15 minutes later in Greenwich Village, they're getting out of the taxi. Well, it wasn't the quickest ride I've ever taken, but at least we made it. Yeah, and it was all I could do to keep him from jumping out to see what the holdup was. The restaurant's right down this block. And they get to the restaurant, and there's a sign on the door. And Steve says, what? Closed? When did that happen? This used to be Bernie's favorite eatery. I didn't think to call first, since they don't take reservations. I'm sure there are plenty of other restaurants to try. How about Mexican food? I can always eat Mexican. So they're inside, and the waitress is taking their order. Frozen strawberry margarita for the lady, and just a seltzer for me. Salt or no salt? Salt. Such a gentleman. Mm-hmm. Placing the order for his lady.
An alcoholic beverage at that.
Well, funny you should say that, because Rachel asks him, tell me something, Steve. Don't you ever drink alcohol? No. My father had a drinking problem. I've had an aversion to this stuff ever since. You don't mind people with you drinking? Not in moderation. And by the way, we have Black Mamba, also known as Tanya, She's wearing a black or blue trench coat with a hat, big brimmed hat over her, and she's standing at the bar, eavesdropping. She thinks to herself, "Your date really is a looker, Rachel. Can't blame you for being as excited as you were." Now, Bob, I want to stop here because it's interesting that Grunewald writes that Steve doesn't drink. He has an aversion to it,
mm-hmm.
and that his dad was an alcoholic. I don't recall ever hearing that his dad was an alcoholic before this. I think I've seen some flashbacks. I can't remember if they were before or after 1990. Something tells me they were after 1990.
I thought so as well. I was surprised too, because I didn't recall that. I didn't read this at the time. It's been a long time since I have read it, probably in the last 5 years or something like that. But yeah, I didn't remember that had been broached this early. About his dad being an alcoholic. I know it's, you know, sort of been common more recently in the last 15 years, but yeah. So
yeah, it could very well be the first time. I'm not 100% sure. However, I'm surprised that Grunewald did this because mm-hmm. knowing that Mark Grunewald has been the man of continuity at Marvel, right? Like, he was known as the continuity cop at Marvel. He had to know that there was a story by J.M. DeMatteis during one of the first stories that he wrote that had Steve in his civilian with Sam and one of his other friends. I can't remember which one. They're at a bar. Drinking pitchers of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve and Sam kind of got a little bit tipsy.
Right.
And then they went out into the alley to stop a crime. And remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. So that story is interesting because one, Steve was drinking. Two, even with his, you know, super soldier serum, he could still get tipsy. So that was, I don't know. It's almost like that story has been like forgotten.
Right. Yeah. I got it. I mean, I don't want to go too far afield, but I, for one, have never liked that sort of embellishment to Steve's background story that his dad was an alcoholic. Never sat well with me. And I know that was particularly in Volume 7, that was really dug into quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it just never sits well with me.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, that, you know, maybe that could be part of the top 10 retcons or something, you know, when we get to that episode. But yeah, I don't know, like maybe the writers felt like, you know, how can we make Steve's past even more challenging, right? His mom died at an early age. He was a scrawny kid. He was in the middle of the depression. He didn't have any money. No, that's not enough for him to overcome.
Right.
Right. His dad also had to be an alcoholic and abuse him and his mom.
Yeah.
You know, like why was that necessary? I don't know. I mean, maybe some people like that story and say, you know what, hey, maybe for, you know, I mean, let's face it. Unfortunately, abuse like that is not so incredibly rare, right? Unfortunately, yeah. Right? I mean, so there's certainly people who have suffered through that, their trauma, been victimized. Maybe this is another way to say, hey, look, you know, Steve, as a frail person, kid, you know, was able to overcome this. You can too. I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping at straws here, you know, but anyway, I found that interesting. And this first thing that came in my mind when in this scene, in this comic.
Good catch, though.
And after a leisurely meal, we see Steve and Rachel walking at night. And now, you know, I don't know if you noticed, and I didn't point this out, before, but when Cap or Steve was hailing the taxi in the very beginning of their date,
mm-hmm.
Rachel was carrying her jacket, you know, not the mm-hmm. one that I pointed out that she was wearing, but she brought an yeah. additional jacket in case it gets chilly. She was holding it. Now we see Steve walking with the jacket draped over his arm, almost like a waiter. He's carrying Rachel's jacket for her.
Wow. The plot thickens.
That's the little details, Bob.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So how do you feel about magic? What do you mean? Do I believe in it? No, not the real kind. Stage magic. I know a terrific magic club on Carmine Street. Sounds great. Thank goodness they're still in business. I think they have a 10 o'clock show we can catch. And they're walking into a place called Mostly Magic. So they're sitting inside, and there's a guy on the stage, and he's looks like he's juggling apples, or maybe they're levitating. It's hard to tell on a comic book panel. And it's this guy, kind of a nerdy looking guy. He's like, "How do you like them apple folks? What quote is that from?"
That would be Rick Goodwill Hunting.
Yes, very nice. How do you like them apples? When did Goodwill Hunting come out?
I was just wondering that too. It was certainly after this. It had to have been.
Yes, it was 1997.
Yeah.
So maybe the writer, maybe Matt Damon and Ben Affleck stole that from this panel.
Maybe.
Right? Because that's what he's saying here. He's like, "How do you like them apples, folks?"
I got to think that was a common saying. I don't know why I got to say that, but I think I might have heard it growing up. That sounds like something like, you know, my dad would say, his generation.
Wasn't the quote more like, "How do you like them apples?" But there wasn't an emphasis on them. I always thought Ben Affleck put an emphasis on them.
I think it was just the Boston accent.
Okay. No, I'm serious. I always thought Ben Affleck, you know, he was like, "How do you like them apples?" Right.
Right.
Yeah. Like he totally put an emphasis on them, which according to the letterer here, bolded the word them. I don't know.
Well, here it says right here, and you know, Wikipedia is not wrong. It says, "How do you like them apples?" is an expression that supposedly originated during the First World War when the Allies' anti-tank grenade was colloquially called a toffee apple because of its bulb-like appearance on a stick. The phrase was a taunt against the enemy when the the toffee apple grenade stuck to the tank.
Oh, interesting. Now, in Wikipedia, does it actually emphasize the word them?
It does say, "How do you like them apples?"
No, I know it says that, but does it emphasize the word them and in bold or italics or anything like that?
And then it just says, "How do you like them apples?"
Okay, right. That's my point. That's an expression. That expression has been around for a long, long time. How do you like them apples?
Uh-huh.
Right? But how do you like them apples? I think that's a variation of the expression.
All right. Okay.
Because it's kind of like someone saying to you, "How do you like them apples?" And then you do something, you're like, "How do you like them apples?" Right? It's almost like a reaction.
All right. At this point, people are like, they're like looking forward. They're like, "Please, Bob, start singing. Girls just want to have fun."
All right. So Steve says to Rachel, "He's pretty good, isn't he?" But then there's all sudden appearing in front of this magician on the stage is the Trump. Now he's he's got a black costume on, has red singular stripes, not like a pinstripe, a red collar, red mask, and a white cape, white gloves, and he's on a white cane, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he just shows up, appears out of nowhere. I interrupt this cretin's performance to bring you a special treat, an impromptu, an unannounced, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the ultra-stylish ledger domain of the one and only Trump. And he puts his hand up like, ta-da! And the guy behind him thinks, hey, how'd he... Make yourself scarce, apple eater. This stage belongs to me. Run along or I'll make it go poof, capiche? And Rachel looks at Steve. Is this part of the show? Beats me. Poof. Ow! What did I tell you? And then, sitting in the back of the audience, we have Black Mamba. And she's thinking to herself, the Trump, eh? What a scoundrel. Went out with him once, and he stuck me with the check. Must be here to sharpen up his sleight of hand skills. Ah, this is a riot. Or else to fleece the crowd. Wouldn't put it past him. Just to be on the safe side, I better take him out of play, as only the Black Mamba can. Now, do you know what Black Mamba's special power is, Bob?
You know, Rick, I got to tell you, I got a thing with the Serpent Society.
Why did it have to be snakes?
Which is, I'm not a fan. And so I've always breezed past the Serpent Society stories. I'm just not familiar with the characters in the Serpent Society. So you're going to have to educate me here.
Well, I won't have to educate you because Mark Gruenwald does that in this story. He explains her power. But all of a sudden there's this black kind of mist that exudes from her and starts floating towards the Trump on the stage. The Ace of Spades is a special card with special... Damn those hyphens, Bob.
Properties.
Because it says P-R-P hyphen, and then it goes to the next line, erties. All right, let's try this again. The Ace of Spades is a special card with special properties. I almost did it again. Properties. It can, and then he starts thinking, what? Am I seeing things or is there some kind of weird mist around my head? And then Steve starts clapping. Ha ha, never saw that trick before. A deck of cards that emits smoke. But Rachel knows what's going on. She's like, that's not smoke. That's the weird dark stuff Tanya uses to memorize people into thinking they're seeing their greatest object of desire. Is Tanya here? And if so, why? And so that's her power, right? They just explained what her power is. Well, and then what does the Trump see, Bob?
Yeah, I rescind my previous comment about not being a fan of the Serpent Society. So this is a very, very, Tanya appears to be unclothed, shrouded in a mist.
Bound chicka bound bound.
Yeah. I'd be mesmerized as well.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
Yeah. Because I know you got a little thing for, black hair, little brute beauties like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so she is. She's standing there unclothed. Although she has her arm over her chest to hide anything, you know, make this a PG comic. And she says, I want you, lover. Come follow me. And she's like doing a little, you know, putting her hand up with a little, her index finger kind of like, you know, pointing, follow this way. I'm doing this, but no one can see me doing these. You know, this motion.
Yeah, just like that, folks. Just okay. Like Greg Rick is doing.
And he's like, yes. And then the audience is like, ha, look at that jerk pretend he's being hypnotized. Ha, ha, ha. And he's just walking with his hands out with this black mist around his eyes. Take me. Take me. And then people in the audience, here's their thought bubbles. And one guy's like, scratching his head. Why did that masked man leave so quickly? I'm not sure I understood his act, but he certainly went over big with the weekend, with the weeknight trade. And then we see Rachel has a thought balloon. Don't see Tanya anywhere. Guess that mist is part of his act. So then the little Apple guy, nerd guy, comes back on the stage. Let's all put our hands together for the comedy stylings of the Trump. Was he something or what? And he thinks, that dippy drop-in threw the pacing of the whole show out of whack. No problem. I'm a professional. I mean, like Bob, like these two thought balloons, completely unnecessary to the story.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That Gru does this all the time. It's I don't know if it's endearing or just annoying, but yeah. It is him. And when the evening's performances conclude, so the two of them are walking outside. This time, Rachel is wearing the jacket that Steve was so nicely carrying for her. So what are you in the mood for now? I don't know about you, Bob, but they just went to dinner and a show.
Mm-hmm.
That's twice as much as what I usually do when I go out.
Yeah. And like, how do they get this all done by 9? Because that's my bedtime.
I know.
So,
and then Rachel says, anything you suggest is fine by me, Steve. Bom chicka bom bow. He's like, okay, then let's see. How about we walk a bit? It's a nice night. You know, my old neighborhood isn't all that far from here. Mind strolling in that general direction? I'd really like that. And then Rachel thinks, I'm not sure, but I think he's really trying to open up and show me his human side. 10 blocks cross town. Now that's just too far, Bob.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
10 blocks? Come on. So he points to his old brick building. That's it. The building I lived in as a kid. After my dad passed away, my mom started a hand laundry right there in that basement. I used to help her when I go home from school. Kind of surprised the place still standing. I don't get down here much. You may not believe this, Steve, but I spent my formative years on the Lower East Side. Really? Whereabouts? South of Yancey Street. Come on, I'll show you. What? More blocks? Dear Lord. I didn't know you were a native Manhattanite. I'm not, technically. I was born in Texas, where my mom's from. We moved here when I was 3. And then they eventually get to it, and it's a boarded up old building. See that tenement building? My gang, that is my crowd, used to hang out here. Had my first kiss sitting on that stoop. Steve, this may sound silly, but would you... Excuse me. But do you hear what I hear? What? You mean that commotion? What do you think she was about to ask him, Bob?
I don't know, Rick. Judging from my personal experience, I believe my wife used that exact same opening the first time we kissed. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So maybe she was going in for the smooch. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think she's like, hey, let's go sit over here where I got my first kiss and mm-hmm. you can give me my most recent one.
Right. Yeah.
Commotion? Sounds more like a demolition derby. So Steve just starts running down the sidewalk. And all of a sudden, those double pleated slacks, you could see the muscles bulging out of his pants.
They really do give you a freedom of movement that sort of the more recent skinny jeans simply don't.
It's true. Yeah. She's like, Steve? No. I knew it was too good to last. He's going to play hero. So Steve turns the corner and there's these two people battling in front of this particular building. What in the? A man and woman fighting, wearing costumes. And there's this big, gigantic, you know, very strong looking woman. She's like, hold still, Jack, so I can give you what's coming to you. Pound cakes, baby. Chill out. I tell you, I meant that I said as a compliment. Yeah, I'll bet you did. No, really. Now, her name is Pound Cakes. All right, we'll leave that alone.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. You know what his name is? His name is Jack Hammer.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know that, but I guessed it from his attire.
Yes, because he's kind of got a helmet that looked like he could pile drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He could pile drive pound cake. He could jackhammer away. Oh boy. So Pound Cake says, "Look, Romeo, a wrestling superstar like me has a reputation to worry about. If I let every two-bit pug hit on me in the public like what you did, tell you what, if I could pin you, then will you go out with me?" And then Rachel grabs Steve on the shoulder. "Come on, Steve, no need to get involved. They're not hurting anyone except each other, maybe. Look at the cracks that woman is making in the cement with just her boots. Any minute now, there's going to be some major property damage, I'm sure." Oh, Steve. Gotta be worried about that property damage. "But you don't have your costume, or then I do this plain clothes." But before he can do that, this black limousine pulls up right in front of Steve, cutting off between him and Pile Driver and Pound Cakes. And then guess who the driver of the limousine was? Anaconda. She's a member of the Serpent Society. She's a big, big, big woman. And she comes out. She goes, "Mabel, Harry, what's all the ruckus about here?" "Whoa, that's the strong woman from the Serpent Society, Anaconda. She's big trouble. What's she want?" "Name ain't Harry. It's Jackhammer, Landy." "Whatever. I think it's time the three of us had ourselves a little chat. Come along now." Now, Anaconda's power is her arms can stretch out like a big anaconda snake, wrap around someone. And Jack Henry yells, "Hey!" And Pound Cake is like, "Freak!" And then there's a big, what's that sound that makes?
Zap.
Yes, which tells you that the asp zaps them. And then they get pulled into the limousine. And Rachel yells, "Steve." And the limousine pulls out. "What happened? Those two pugilists just disappeared into that limo. Guess someone's as concerned about property damage as you are." And then we look inside the limo. And the two of those ne'er-do-wells are on the floor of the limo tied up. And Black Mama says, "That was our closest call yet, but you two did great." Anaconda's like, "Dimey better appreciate all the trouble we're going through to make sure date with tall, blonde, and mysterious pulls off without a hitch. So where do we dump the losers?" And then we cut to Steve and Rachel in front of her building. And the caption reads, "Inevitably." So Steve says, "I really had fun tonight, Rachel. Thanks for talking me into this whole thing. Maybe next time you won't have to twist my arm so much." "I had a wonderful time too, Steve. Well, good night." No good night kiss? Do friends kiss friends? Friendly kisses, sure. And they kiss. Bob? That doesn't look like a friendly kiss.
No, that's not like any friendly kiss I've ever had. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
A friendly kiss is like a, you know, peck on the cheek, maybe peck on the lips, but lips don't usually do what they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. We used to do in the diplomatic side, you know, we did those, you know, those sort of like cheek kiss, you know, where you go like, you know, one on each cheek, you know, and you go back and forth a few times, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe a few more if you really liked it.
Yeah. It's really weird. Cause like, you don't know who's doing it, you know, like, do I do the handshake or do I do the, you know, it's just, it gets confusing.
Bob, when you meet people, mm-hmm. how do you greet them? if you know, these are friends,
uh-huh.
oh, friends or yeah. family, people that you know well, how yeah. do you greet them?
Oh, it's definitely go with the handshake, pull them uh-huh. in for a hug.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very masculine.
Yeah.
Very
I'm masculine. A big pull in for the hug sort of thing.
Okay. You know what I do? I go right for the hug.
Yeah. You go right in. Huh?
I go right in.
Yeah.
I go right in.
Yeah.
See, I'm a hugger.
I got the hand. I pull them in because otherwise,
you're 6'1".
I don't want to go for
that. That's a power move. Which
I don't want to go for the hug, and then they're like, "Hey, abort."
Oh, I'm a hugger every time. I'm a hugger every time. And what happens is people who don't want to hug, they're like, "Oh, I'm getting hugged now."
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's your mail.
Yeah. That'll be 217. yeah, it's funny. When my first marriage, her side of the family did not like to hug.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I was nicknamed the hugger. Here's the funny part. My son's just like me. Uh-huh. Just like me. He's a hugger. And the funny yeah. thing is now he's older, right? He's mm-hmm. he's in college. He's so much taller than me now. So it's so funny when he comes in, he's like bending down to hug uh-huh. his dad, which makes me feel a little insecure, but whatever. Yeah. That's okay. My daughter, on the other hand, couldn't be. No, don't hug me.
Don't hug me, yeah.
No, she's not a hugger. She's like her mom.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, so he's like his dad. She's like her mom. In fact, for Christmas, we got my daughter a t-shirt, and it's a picture of a cactus. And underneath it says, not a hugger.
That's awesome.
So one of these days, Bob, now, mm-hmm. you know what? People may who've been listening to this podcast for a year now, or not a year, but they've listened to all these, they may think you and I have
yeah.
go way back. Right.
Right. Oh yeah.
But we don't,
we don't. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
this April will be 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. Since yeah. we've virtually known each other, we've never met anybody in person. Yeah. Right.
We almost met once, but I had to abort. Yeah.
That's true. That's yeah. true. You were almost up in this area or whatever. Yeah. One of these days I'll get down to Florida. And here's the funny thing. We'll go in for the hug. You're going to go in for the handshake. I'm going to go in for the hug. And then you're 7 inches taller than me. And it's going to be awkward.
I'm just going to snuggle you up in
it's
there.
It's going to be awkward. You're going to be like patting me on the head.
There you go, my hugger.
Oh, that's good, funny. All right, so Rachel goes into her apartment and she's walking in. The doors have closed. She's inside walking, and Steve, ever the gentleman, is standing there watching her walk away, making sure that she's safe, right? Because that's what a gentleman does. And then he hails a taxi, right? So just around the corner, Black Mamba says to Asp, "Thank God it's over. Think we ought to follow the cab? Check this man of Rachel's out a little bit? No, I think we've done enough undercover work for one night." So good thing they didn't follow him, because they would have put one and one together and figured out he was Captain America, because they went to, you know, he's at the Avengers headquarters. And 15 minutes later, Steve's walking in. "Glad to see no one's waited up for me, I guess. I'm sure they're all going to grill me about my night out tomorrow." So then we cut to the bathroom where he's got his shirt off. He's brushing his teeth in front of the sink. "Funny, I almost feel guilty for enjoying myself so much," I certainly didn't expect to. Rachel's so unlike Sharon. Bernie. Now he's laying in bed. He's on his back, hands behind, crossed behind his head. I really need to talk to her. Tell her I finally filled the emptiness that her leaving left inside me. He's picking up the phone, a land phone, by the way. And he's like, wait, what am I, nuts? Why would she want to hear that? Especially at 3 a.m. So he laying back down, his hands behind his head, on his top of his bed. What a life I lead. I'm usually too busy or too exhausted to think about it much anymore. Don't know if that's good or bad. For years, my American dream has been to fight to give other people the chance to realize whatever their American dreams might be. I guess I've lost track of how this commitment to others has left me with so little time for myself. I'm not complaining. Life is full, rewarding, and yet I see by tonight how I've been denying myself a lot of life's simple pleasures. Maybe I've got to find a way to work more fun into my life. I'm sure Rachel would be more than willing to help me do it. But before I'd let her, I'd have to know if she's willing to give whatever illegitimate activity she may have once engaged in for good. Now, that's the end of that story. Now we're going to cut to the backup story, which, as I mentioned before, the art is by Mark Bagley. And we cut to Rachel entering her apartment after their date. And the name of this story is Girl Talk. So Rachel has a smile on her face, and she's thinking. And the caption says, while Steve Rogers' thoughts turn from euphoria to melancholy across town, and we see Rachel, and she has a smile on her face. She's thinking, what a night, what a night, what a night. I even got him to kiss me for criminy's sake. And here I was hearing things, or did he actually say something about next time we have a date? Man, oh man, I knew I'd get over on him if I really worked at it. I knew even a living legend had a heart that could be won. Okay, so it's not all like he's all mine or anything, but I just know I'm the top contender. He's got to be thinking of me right this minute. And then standing in the room as she's walking into her apartment is Black Mamba in her trench coat. And Rachel's like, someone's broken in. And she pulls out a diamond. At ease, dear. Oh, you. What are you doing here, Tanya? I just had to know how your big date went. Now, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
So we switch from her taking off her coat, not even her overcoat, her undercoat, mm-hmm. right? And she still has the orange dress, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then in this next, I just know how your big date went. Mm-hmm. And in this very next panel, she's wearing a nightie.
Right.
And putting on a robe.
Yeah. Not sweats.
But it happened very quickly.
It was a quick presto changeo. But I think, you know, these like superhero supervillains, they get really good at this quick change. Occupational skill set. Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Very good point. You've got your nerve barging in. What if my date was, you know, still in progress? Ha! You don't think I know how far you'd go on a first date? I'm your best friend, for crying out loud. Let's have some tea. Come on, don't be shy. Tell me, how was it? It was great. All I hoped. So what's the story on your mystery man? All you said is he's handsome and attracts trouble. What's he got that all the serpent guys hot for your bod don't? Well, he's just the most incredible guy I've ever met. Gentle, honest, charming, manly, but boyish in certain ways. You know, Bob, I'm looking back now on our What Would Cap Do coins.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have the wrong attributes.
Yeah, you're right. These are
right. I mean, our attributes. I'm looking at a coin right now. Our attributes say humility, empathy, honesty, perseverance, integrity, mm-hmm. compassion, sacrifice, courage. How was I to know all along we should have said gentle, charming, manly but boyish?
Well, you know, the second edition.
That's true. Next coin. So Black Mama says, I didn't know you went in for that sort of stuff, Rachel. Well, he's the reason I want to go straight. He wouldn't approve of me working for the Serpent Society anymore. I just know it. Let me ask you something, friend to friend. How do you intend to support yourself? No offense, but I don't see a lot of conventional skills you could put on your resume. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. We do get jobs that don't require lawbreaking, you know. In fact, I've got a bodyguard job tomorrow, a cool 10 thou for a day's work. I'll be willing to cut you in. It's tempting, but I really shouldn't. I don't want to spoil your evening, Ray, but is this guy really worth all this? How can it be right for you if he won't accept you for what you are? Is any man worth the sacrifice you're making? What do you hope to get out of your relationship with him? Good times? Regular you-know-what? Marriage? What's the regular you-know-what, Bob?
Life insurance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Health benefits?
Health benefits, yeah. Dental plan.
Hmm. Rachel looks down at her tea. I don't know. Well, if I were you, I'd factor in what you stand to gain before you figure out what you're willing to give up. Just some sisterly advice. You can ignore it. Oh, look what I did. I ruined your good mood. I'm sorry. She reaches in. She kisses her on the temple. No, it's okay. I better rub before I strain our friendship further. I'll see myself out. Good night. Slam. And man, Rachel overreacts just a tad. She smacks her teacup on her saucer and her. And what's it? What's that expression? What's the sound effect here?
Splash.
And she knocks it on the floor. And she starts just running away to her bedroom. Some friend, darn straight, she ruined my good mood. What makes me angriest is that she's right on the money. How am I going to make a living now that I'm out of the mercenary game? Here I am contemplating a life of virtue when I haven't the slightest idea how superheroes make ends meet. And she goes into her closet and she looks at her Diamondback costume. Wonder if Cap is paid anything by the Avengers. I never thought I'd ask, but he must be. Well, I got a lot of sins to atone for before I'm Avengers material. What else is there? There was that Heroes for Hire firm, but they're out of business. What if the law simply doesn't pay? And then she tosses the Diamondback uniform on the ground. Is Cap worth all this grief? The empty bank account? The empty feeling inside me? And then she goes and she tosses herself on the bed face down into her pillow. What is wrong with me? I haven't let a guy get to me like this in years. I was just having fun at first, flirting around with a living legend, but why did I let myself fall for him like some silly schoolgirl? What am I going to get out of this besides having my rep as a criminal ruined? Am I really so vain as to think I have what it takes to make a man like Cap love me as I want, need me? Why do I have to complicate my life so badly? The next morning, Rachel's on her phone. It's a cordless phone, Bob. You know how you could tell?
The absence of a cord?
The long antenna.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tanya, Rachel, did I get you up? No, just on my way out the door. Hey, sorry about last night, really. I should have given you a day to get down off your high before. It's okay. I just wanted to ask you. You changed your mind? You went in on the job? No, I wanted to ask you if Sidewinder's sister still ran that fashion boutique on the Upper East Side. I believe so. Why? I was thinking of calling her to see if she needs a new sales clerk. And then in the background, we see the Diamondback uniform on the ground. The end. So what'd you think of the story, Bob?
Yeah, that was a fun story. It was cool. It was cool.
It's always fun seeing the personal side of Steve, right? I mean, we see Captain America. We see the living legend. We see the man from World War II, the man out of time, the leader of the Avengers, the leader during Secret Wars, the guy full of confidence that walks around, everybody trusts and believes in. But then there's the Steve side that just reminds us, he's just like us.
Yeah.
He has doubts. He has insecurities. He has things that he thinks about, he ponders over, he worries about. That's always good every once in a while to see, to remind us that he's relatable. He's not this godlike character. He's just like you and me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this story does this issue does a great job driving home that point that, outside of the mask, he's just a regular guy. And he's a little bit older than, those around him. He's got some experiences that they don't have, but he has those doubts and securities, like you said, the same ones that that we all have when we go out on those first dates. He has those same butterflies that we all have. I bet this was very, very relatable to teenagers, young men and women readers at that time who picked this up off the newsstand and said, "Wow, this is just like the last date I went out on with that girl or that guy." And I think that's pretty cool that a writer can do that, can make a hero relatable to the everyday experience of a reader.
Oh my God, Bob, you just nailed something home for me. Like, hit very too much to the core. So this book probably hit the stands. It has a June 1990 cover date, but it came out in April of 1990, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bob, April of 1990 was my first date who ended up being my wife.
Oh, wow. Wow.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
I was going through these same emotions as the time of I was getting this off the comic stand and reading it. I was going through this. So, yeah, Bob, you're absolutely 100% right. It's so relatable to me. Yeah, I was in college and this was April of 1990 was when I met my girlfriend who ended up becoming my first wife and was together with for a very, very long time. So, wow.
Yeah. So there you have it. I'm not saying now, I'm not telling folks to go plumb the Captain America comics for dating advice or, tricks of the trade, so to speak. My son, my son's 12, he just turned 12 and he's been learning lines from his best friend, who's an eighth grader, a seventh grader. And the lines are as bad as you might imagine. And so he's been like trying them out on my wife. My wife's like, no, dude.
No. You mean he was like, hey, mom, if I say this to a girl, how would you react if you were her? Kind of scenario.
Yeah. They're kind of like, hey, check out this new one I heard,
And, let's hear one. Do you know?
One of them was, I think it was something like, you may not be from Tennessee, but you're the only 10 I see.
Oh.
You handle this, honey.
What's the one where if I told you
you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me?
Yes, yes, that's what I was thinking of.
Oh, I haven't told him that one yet, but no.
Oh, you totally have to now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's too funny. Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
All right, Bob. Well, this was a fun story. We will certainly have to revisit the Mark Grunewald, Ron Lim era, because, you know, shortly after, like, well, not shortly, the very next issue after this is the 6-part story, seven-part story, Streets of Poison.
Oh my God, we got to do that one, Rick.
Yeah, yeah, we totally do. I know that's a fan favorite, but it's kind of like, how do we do a 7-part story? We'd have to break that up into 2 episodes, right?
We did. I don't want, you know, folks are going to be late to work. They're going to be circling the parking lot.
We already promised them this is one issue that we were going to keep this short.
They're like, I've been out here. They're like those folks trapped up in Virginia during the snowstorm last night overnight. They're sitting in their cars trying to finish the 7-part series podcast. We gotta make it digestible.
Yeah, 100%. All right, we'll get to the Streets of Poison. We also need to do Acts of Vengeance too. Mm-hmm. That's a 3-parter that we can do. I want to do that 2-parter of Cap versus Crossbones and Madripoor with Rachel. That should be one that we do.
I love Madripoor stories. So
yeah. Yeah. So anyway, because you know what happens after Streets of Poison is the story where Rachel is on trial with the Serpent Society. Because because they realize that she's now with Captain America. So she gets captured by the Serpent Society and she goes, you know, on trial with them. So that's a cool story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got to get to these early 90s Grunewald, Ron Lim stuff. So we'll revisit that definitely again in 2020, we promise. All right, Bob. So speaking of...
Did you say we're going to get to those in 2020? I mean, do you have some PIM particles that we're going
to... when there's a new year, they still write the old year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to go back 2 years. That's what I like to do.
You're an overachiever.
We're very, very under either one. Yeah. All right. So speaking of, upcoming stories, our next podcast, Bob, this is exciting. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
We are going to go to the year 1980 and we're going to visit Captain America 241. And I know what you're thinking, 241. I don't know what the issue that is. Well, that's okay. If you saw the cover, you would see it. It's Captain America versus the Punisher.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to do that issue in the next episode. So make sure you come back for that. And also please, please, please make sure wherever you're listening, please subscribe. If you're on Apple or if you're on Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating. And please any type of reviews. We really appreciate those as well. All right, Bob, it's been fun wrapping Cap with you.
Let's do this again real soon.
All right. He's Bob Lucius, and I'm Rick Verbanis, and you have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.